I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part. It is time to become a part.
Welcome again to ET Yoga. As usual, I think we've got an interesting show in store for you this evening, jam-packed with information. However, before we get to the heart of tonight's program, which will be kind of around that area of Palladian gift economy or equal value system, which also connects to Ubuntu, if you haven't heard about that, which obviously then connects to the Anunnaki, which connects into gold, which connects into white powder gold, which connects into alchemy. So that's kind of the general topics that we'll be focusing on tonight's show. However, before we get to that, there are a couple of topics that I do want to quickly relate to, and because I may be making some inferences during the course of the show this evening to health and my opinions around certain aspects of medicine and medical care or something of that nature, I would like to give the following disclaimer. That this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, care, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. So, now, having said that, and sort of free to give my own opinions about what I might do in certain situations, and that's the focal point of information that I offer on ET Yoga. In fact, ET Yoga kind of came about in my mind because I had listened to a number of radio shows, and for my own particular likes, I found it kind of, a little bit boring to wait and wait and wait for someone to make a point over the course of an hour or two of a program. And one of the things that I always wanted to do was a show where there's lots of information and lots of things you can follow up on and research on your own. And that's one of the motivations I had for doing ET Yoga. Now, to talk about those quick subjects that I'd like to cover right at the top of the show, they relate to some current things that are going on. With respect to last program on ET Yoga, I mentioned that the phenomena known as the Phoenix Lights is more closely associated with a group of beings that are called the Yael. Now, for those that are familiar with Bashar being an Essasani, and he is channeled through Daryl Anka, Bashar has mentioned that the Essasani, whom Bashar was of that civilization, And apparently they are now called the Shekinah because the universe has dictated that all the levels are moving up in dimension, and apparently theirs has. So they've moved now from 6th to 7th density, and which is, as I understand it, beyond form. So although those beings can take form should they desire to, they are actually evolved past physical form. And the Esasani called the Yael the Shalaniah, and the Shalaniah meaning those who would come first. Now, in addition to the Phoenix Lights experiences, the Yael have also made appearances and flyovers over a number of areas on the planet and different cities. Of course, the most famous being the slow passage over the entire state of Arizona, witnessed by thousands of people. And I mentioned that last week that the Yael would play an important factor with respect to uniting hybrid children with their parents, and parents being humans who were part of the gray abduction scenario. And I wanted to make a point of mentioning on tonight's show that if you believe that you would like to research more information about that, that a good possibility would be to get on the internet and go to www.hybridchildren, and I think you'll find that you'll get some information there that could be highly of interest to you specifically, because what's happening is that basically things are kind of moving into the second phase of that particular system, and it's www.hybridchildrencommunity.com is actually the correct way to find more information. So that's www.hybridchildrencommunity.com. Because in phase two of this particular adventure, let's say, is the gathering together of people who feel that they may have hybrid children, and the children being a combination of gray and human. And it's an amazing process if you happen to be directly involved. And they're in phase two, which is the gathering of people. They're connecting, talking in groups. I know in Los Angeles there's an active group where they have meetings, and people with similar experiences are meeting together and talking. And, of course, the ultimate here would be the creation of certain, let's call them environments, whereby the parents will be able to be connected with their hybrid children. And that's going to be like coming up soon on the agenda. In fact, there may have been some of that happening already. The information that I get is that over the course of about a 10-year period, these meetings will be not publicized. So they'll be, and the meeting sites will be set up in such a way with such a technology that they can be sort of appear and disappear fairly rapidly for obvious reasons. And at some point down the line, then the contact will be made public. And of course, no doubt this could be connected with extraterrestrial first contact, at least a public statement concerning that. So, for those interested in that subject, I think it's really an amazing topic. It would appear from my perspective that what's happening is through the dream state and through the intention of the mothers on Earth that are very interested in meeting with their hybrid children, and from the perspective of the children themselves that are aboard Yale craft, that there is a mutual intention there to create this meeting. So they have a frequency match for each other, and that frequency match is certainly going to create and manifest those opportunities. So hope that's of interest to some of you out there. Now, the second current topic that I just wanted to give my take on concerned the California crop circle that popped up, I guess, in the last week. And lots of UFO sightings and activity all along California. And one of the sites that I ran into talked about the crop circle being connected with the number 192. And somewhere in the article, it did make a reference to 192 being connected with the element known as iridium. But that was as far as the article went. Now, when I saw that, a couple of bells rang for me, because I'm preparing to do tonight's ETO show, and some of my information is going to be connected to the concept around monatomics and white powder gold and alchemy. And all of a sudden, I would get this California crop circle with the message like of 192. Well, my take is that, yeah, 192 is apparently the atomic weight of iridium. And the connection for me is, for Californians, is that you're now being apparently exposed to more and more levels of radiation from Fukushima through the Pacific Ocean. And it would not ring a bell for a lot of people to realize that iridium is an exotic element. It's a monoatomic, which means it's a high spin electron. It has superconductive aspects to it. It's multidimensional. It also has the ability to reprogram DNA and cure DNA and repair DNA cells. So the connection for me is that, okay, iridium and rhodium in particular are the two key ingredients, let's say, in cell repair. Cellular repair, specifically even from radiation, because I know there have been experiments, let's say, with rhodium and iridium with certain people with cancer who had also received chemotherapy, and the rhodium and iridium took care of the issue. Now, to my way of thinking, this is huge. Although, again, a lot of people wouldn't connect with the way that you might be able to be connected with a rhodium and iridium. Well, interestingly enough, rhodium and iridium are present in flax seeds and flaxseed oil. And as it turns out, rhodium is apparently in pretty good quantity in your aloe vera plant. Interesting to note that aloe vera, being a Pleiadian gift to this planet, and personally, I always keep aloe vera plant handy. I love the plant to begin with, but from a very practical point of view, I can share with you a process that you might be interested in. And that is to take a slip of the aloe vera plant and cut it in half and extract the juices and some of the inside pulp from that strip. And it tastes awful, so my suggestion is to put that juice and the pulp in a small jar. And then what I do is I'll take a large teaspoon and pour some honey on the bottom, and then pour some of the juices on top of the honey, and then I'll take some more honey and put on top of that, and then swallow it. It's an incredible gift from the Pleiadians. And for those in the kind of a medical area, we all know of the benefits of aloe vera and aloe vera products on external cuts and the ability for it to assist us in healing. What a lot of people aren't aware of is how amazingly it is taken internally for stomach disorders and all kinds of issues. So this is one practical use that people can avail themselves of, and that is get yourself an aloe vera plant and take some rhodium monatomics. We're going to be talking more about monatomics later because it's the topic that nobody seems to know about. You walk into a room full of doctors and start talking about monatomics and they don't know what you're talking about. So the interesting factor here is that I found was all of a sudden we have the crop circle and we have the number 192. We have this connection with iridium and rhodium, and also amazing connection here with some just very practical ways that you can avail yourself. Another one of those interesting aspects here is I think it was in the 50s, Joanna Budwig had a cancer cure that was a combination of flaxseed oil and cottage cheese. And I know some people who actually were on that diet, and they mixed the cottage cheese with flaxseed oil and put some cayenne there. And for those who at least can handle eating cottage cheese, that was one way that it actually tastes pretty good, and I've tasted it myself. So it's one possibility that people can think about as well with respect to how to ingest the flaxseed oil, which, again, to my way of thinking, isn't the most desirable taste. So I just wanted to pass along some information on those two subjects in case anybody wanted to do some further research on that. Now, into the heart of the program this evening, I want to begin by sharing with you some off-planet systems of economics. And the first is that we're going to talk about is the Pleiadian gift economy, or what's commonly known as the equal value system of economics. And the equal value system transcends the dichotomy of wealth and poverty, as well as alternative money systems. And it's a system for truly advanced civilizations in which everyone is valued and able to freely do what they love to do without contorting or selling themselves in order to, quote-unquote, make money. And wealth has meaning only when you feel lack, and it's a matter of polarity. Your true state is that of infinitely abundant beings, and this is from the Pleiadians, and that most people have not yet learned how to step into this state and let it serve them. Let us say you could have everything you wanted, whenever you wanted. How then is wealth defined? There can be no wealth, because it is only measured against a state of lack. Wealth is the measure of what you have compared to what others have. So, some extraterrestrial societies, and such as several on the Pleiadian planets, they have a system called the equal value system, which is a reflection of their beliefs about abundance and the free state of their society. And the equal value system might sound simplistic, but actually requires tremendous spiritual and emotional evolution to master. As an analogy, if you need food in that society, you simply walk into the supermarket, get the food, and leave without paying. And when somebody comes to you for your service, you provide it without charge. This system reflects a balance of wealth that has no arbitrary, constantly shifting values. The foundation of their wealth is a deep sense of value for each member of the society, and everyone is eager to keep their world evolving by constantly following their creative excitement. And if we pay attention to Bashar and his advice that we follow our excitement as it's our true compass with respect to what our higher selves really want us to be doing. And this type of planetary economy is a holistic unit. In contriving this type of society, one might ask obvious questions such as who takes out the garbage or performs the unpleasant tasks? Well, in a society where creative freedom is encouraged and not suppressed, there are many inventors who create technology to deal with every challenge, garbage included. And free energy devices have been created to handle all of the planet's energy demands. And I think we all know from rumor, at least, that there are free energy devices currently, and this information is currently being suppressed from the public. Now, without a government or a corporation hoarding profits and controlling new discoveries, the best interest of society as a whole or as individuals is never overlooked. The spirit of the society is expressed through constant achievement and creative freedom rather than constant profits. And this is a symptom of a healthy, holistic organism. Where there is a need, there is someone to fill the need. And this might sound alien to you, but look at the many enthusiastic inventors in your world who want to promote alternative fuel sources but are stopped by big business. Now, any planet can eventually develop this type of society. However, it cannot happen now on Earth while you are in the present level of fear. If one day all the world leaders said, okay, now we'll have the Pleiadian equal value system, there'd be chaos because there'd be tremendous hoarding because a lot of people would not believe you deserve it. And you'd feel as if you had to grab as much as you could before someone changed their mind. Your planet is simply not emotionally ready for this type of system. There is too much invested in lack and victimhood. There is too much invested in the polarized belief of the have and the have-not mentality. Now, interesting to note here that Bashar has been asked about when in the future might we have a cashless society or something approaching this type of a system. And he said that the way he reads the energy, that probably about 50 years. He says it could be sooner, but, you know, in that range. So it's not so off the chart, especially when you consider the fragile nature of the current global economy and what type of systems may take their place or what transitional systems may take the place of the current systems that we have. Now, there must be a deep internal transformation before you can embrace the Pleiadian equal value system or your version of it and the version of the distribution of wealth. Now, on our planet, communism was an immature attempt at an equal value system, and in a sense, so was capitalism. A true equal value system that supports society will not have any oppressive control, rigidity, or constraints attached to it, because society is tiring of the old games of lack and wealth, and you are moving towards ideas that reflect self-responsibility. A precursor to an equal value system will appear when the time is right. And freedom begins at the individual level. However, you must remember that freedom and equality are important and inherent properties of your spirit. And once recognized, you must then begin experiencing your freedom. Otherwise, you will continue the cycle of dependence and corruption in a downward spiral. If you become more self-responsible and affiliate yourself with others who are making the same choice, you will always have what you need when you need it. Always. It is a very different way to live. These words do not convey the true depth of the meaning of freedom of the spirit, because words always fall short in such matters. be aware that bondage is a state of mind and a state of heart. Choose freedom, live that freedom, and watch your lives and your planet transform before your eyes. And kind of reminds me of Bashar's definition of abundance, which is the ability to do what you need to do when you need to do it. And I'll repeat that one. Abundance being the ability to do what you need to do when you need to do it. And notice there's no mention of money. It also reminds me of the communal ideas that were back in the 60s. The successful ones to me were either spiritual or they were for survival. And it seems that clearly we need to develop new systems to take the place of old ones when they do collapse. And also brings up the old galactic question asked about humans, which is that Earth humans don't respect themselves, they don't respect each other or the planet, so what possibly can be the value of Earth humans? And interestingly enough, apparently on 22 other planets that are in a similar state of evolution as the Earth, none of those use a monetary system. Kind of interesting points in a way. And yet I think it's also fair to say that with respect to how humans interact with humans, that there's certainly been a huge degree of manipulation and control behind the scenes, even genetically, with respect to keeping the planet in a state of fear and warring and this concept. And certainly we need to evolve to the point where we recognize there's only one race on this planet, the human race, and there's not a really a justification for killing off each other. Also related to this Pleiadian equal value system, I noticed that Project Camelot, an interview with Kerry Cassidy and a guy named Michael Tellinger, very fascinated by the two main topics that he seems to be really immersed in at the moment, one being the development of an economic system called Ubuntu, and that's U-B-U-N-T-U. And pretty fascinating stuff, I think, because it has a lot of similarities to the Pleiadian equal value system. And when we're talking about money, one of the things that he brings up, and here's studies, is that the priest kings created money as a tool of power and control. And it goes back like 6,000 years at least to the Sumeria. And, of course, we know that in the world today that there are some major banking families, the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Morgans, that have controlled the supply and distribution of money, you know, through the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the International Bank of Settlements. And I guess really, you know, in point of fact, they control the governments and has really made many people on the planet a slave, and especially to money. And I know it doesn't really cross our minds in our normal day-to-day survival mode to think about alternate systems. In fact, most countries are corporations. And if you want to check into, and we're their assets, by the way. So it's kind of like, if you want to check into more information about that kind of thing, I'd suggest a program on YouTube. It's called Changes on the Horizon by James Rink. And it gives a fascinating sort of history concerning the actual technical state of the United States. You know, there seems to me a misconception in our society that somehow people go to college and they gain a lot of knowledge that, you know, average people can't have access to. And I think more from my point of view, because I was involved for many years in the educational system, and I remember a Dr. Peterson that was interviewed as well on Project Kamala, and I believe it was he that said that only 6% of the known information is actually available to the public. And, of course, this kind of relates to the something like an equal value system because, you know, you have to have the proper attitudes in your life and on your planet in order to even think about having that kind of a system. I mean, this whole concept of education, to me, is if you pick a subject, it only goes to a certain point where the power structure suppresses it at that level. And if you take history, are we really taught the real history? Well, only a certain version of it, and apparently most of that's not factual, according to some of the finds that were made in Romania of the holographic history of the Earth, that about 90% of our known history we're going to have to recompute. It doesn't want to connect with our galactic history because then that kind of opens the can of worms about extraterrestrial life and extraterrestrials who are behind the scenes manipulating and controlling life on planet Earth. If you want to get into economics, it only goes so far because if you get into the actual details of economics and how institutions such as the Federal Reserve aren't federal, but they're basically privately owned banks. And when you get started delving into who controls what and how the British Crown, what they control, what the Vatican controls, and when you get into all these ideas, that doesn't paint a very good picture. It just paints a picture of how the control system operates. If you want to get into even religion, is basically keeps you from, in many respects, developing the concept that you can become one with higher consciousness, and also sets itself up as the mandatory mediator between you and your higher self, or you and Prime Creator, or you and God. So all of the system control systems, in fact, all the topics that many people learn about in the colleges, it's information that only can take you, you know, so far, because then it's suppressed, even in the field of medical. Our doctors, even very well-intentioned, are taught a certain process. They're taught primarily how to manage disease and how to prescribe for pharmaceutical necessities. These are all related to profit. It's not so much that we're in an age whereby we're providing cures for things, because that kind of eliminates the business. What we're into is disease management and how profit can be made. And I like to use the analogy of computers, for example. Think about it. We've turned the corner on information, which means that every year and a half or 2 years in science, information doubles. I don't know how long that's been going on for, 50 years at least. Well, think about this. If you put a penny on a chessboard with 64 squares and you double it every square, so you have one penny, then two, then four, then eight, 16, 32, etc. By the time you get to the 64th square, and you can try this on your own if you like, I did it as a school project once, you'll find that just with the pennies doubling on 64 squares, at the end of 64 squares, you've got over $1 million. Okay, so if those units were now information, and information is doubling that fast, can only imagine that the amount of information that's available to a certain aspect of our society. It's even been called the runaway society, because there's an aspect of us that's probably 1,000 years ahead of the rest of us. And not to mention the fact that look at the computers that we're operating with. You think that at the higher levels, that especially with extraterrestrial technologies and things, that how fast is information doubling for them? Is it, you know, every month? Is it every week? Every day? I mean, the amount of information that's out there on any given subject is if we had free access to it, is just absolutely incredible. And certainly the cures for different aspects in our society are have been known for a long time, but again, they're not profitable. They're not part of the money system. And interesting, because that connects back to this Ubuntu, and it also connects to what I call, and actually Alex Collier called, holographic education. So instead of a hierarchy, a society teaches all the knowledge available to the young so that when they become adults, that they surpass their parents, and then they continue the process. And this is opposed to only those who can afford education get it at the so-called higher levels. And even then, you know, as I said, I think there's only about 6% of the known information is made available to the public anyway. But basically, the college education is a tool whereby people fit into society to fit into the power structure and to continue the power structure. So apparently, according to Alex Collier, who is an Andromedan contactee, that every child, whether they understand the knowledge or not, is given the latest and the greatest technology or knowledge, information, data, as it arrives. And it starts at the youngest level. And the children that graduate from school are smarter than their parents, and no one has a problem with that because they are developing and producing for their society. And they're the ones that continue to go out and expand the society and create the holographic pillars of their society. And I think this is, you know, relates specifically back, again, like I said, to Michael Tellinger, who's been, he's produced, in theory at least, this Ubuntu system, you know, a society that functions without the concept of money or any form of barter or trade or the attachment of value to material things. I've made some notes on his concept, but again, I don't, you know, I can't give all the details in just a short radio show. But he's hoping to develop a culture where each individual is encouraged to follow their passion and contributes their natural talents and acquired skills to the greater benefit of all the people in the community and the society at large. And in a society with a new set of laws based on the needs of the people, where everything is provided freely to everyone who contributes. And a society which arts and culture flourishes, allowing people to experience life to the fullest. A society in which spiritual growth of its citizens through the explosion of arts and culture will also be rapid, and also the rise of consciousness to truly embrace the concepts of unity. And in a sense, his system is kind of set up whereby everybody does what they love to do, but they also incorporate a certain number of hours a week, say 3 hours per week, towards community service. So let's say if you had 1,000 people involved in a small community trying to develop a self-sufficiency, of course the cornerstone would be the agricultural element. And but as well, imagine 1,000 people giving 3 hours a week is 3,000 community hours towards whatever other projects need to happen. And I really like it, this Ubuntu. It's also called contributionism, and defined as a world without money where everyone contributes their natural talents or acquired skills for the greater benefit of all in the community. And in his model, every community grows what they need, and they also grow, apparently he has a system based on thirds, so that they actually keep a third and grow three times what they really need so they can sell to other communities. And so initially everything is not totally free, but again, providing very cheap food for others that eventually would buy from them, and then in time, because they can see how that community is set up, that it kind of has a domino effect, and other people will want to replicate it. And I find that that's a very interesting concept. And also the concept of using money to build the structures to be able to get rid of money. In fact, if you think about it, the whole concept of using money, it's virtually developed to make us all slaves to it. And if you I thought about a number of people, let's say, that were existing on a deserted island, and they have a community, and then all of a sudden, after years and years and years of peaceful life and abundance on this community, someone comes up with the brilliant idea that we should spend all of our time amassing these little bits of paper that we're going to call money. And everybody would look at them and think they have just totally lost it. Like, they already, you know, have a great life. Why would they want to spend all their time accumulating these worthless pieces of paper? I mean, if you really think about it, it is truly mind-boggling, but a very slick system that eventually has come about on our planet. And I think at this point, I want to kind of go from here to mention that a little bit of Earth history, because I'm going to be talking a bit about a fellow named Thoth. Some people pronounce it Thoth. But anyway, a group of seventh density Pleiadians that were determined to restore the blueprint of humanity long ago that was lost to the Orion, Draco, Sirian, and other renegade groups took advantage of the fact that few survivors of Atlantis were relatively pure in heart and mind. And those that landed along the Nile River were the first to be visited by the Pleiadian Welcoming Committee, and this contingent was headed by Thoth. And I wanted to give some history here because of his connection and comments concerning monatomic gold and alchemy. And Thoth was a radiant being, according to Arcturian information, of blue-white light, a humanoid with similar color and energy to ourselves in the higher realms. And he was the engineer behind the Great Pyramid. This device served several purposes, but its primary function was as an ascension chamber and controller of Earth's grid system. And as correctly pointed out by your Egyptologist, it was aligned with Mintaka, the central star in Orion's belt. And the Martians, during their heyday, had a similar grid system constructed at the same latitude and longitude on their planet. Thoth and his group had a fair amount of success in working with the Atlanteans to construct temples of initiation and soul evolution along the banks of the Nile. Of the several thousand Atlanteans who made this area their home, a significant percentage took part in the ascension activities and initiations in the Great Pyramid. And the seventh density Pleiadians constructed the devices in a matter of days using levitation and laser technology. The subterranean chambers beneath the Giza Plateau were already inhabited by those who had escaped underground during previous conflagrations. And the Pleiadians, in concert with their underground groups, established the Hall of Records several thousand feet below the Great Pyramid. The Sphinx was later erected by another group of Egyptians to mark the entrance to the portal, that was the Sphinx. And the pyramid was completed in approximately 10,500 BC. And it's only been in the last 20 years that society on our world has correctly dated the Great Pyramid. And until recently, it was assumed this device was linked to various other pyramids that were constructed using the labor of the Egyptian people to serve as tombs for the pharaohs. And I might mention that another interesting artifact they found was that we've seen pictures of Egyptians that appeared to be holding scrolls. Well, it turns out those scrolls were Egyptian healing rods. And I have a set of the rods, and I appreciate they're a little pricey. I think when I bought mine about 10 years ago, they were about $300. But they're an amazing tool Basically, they're the equivalent of getting an hour of acupuncture every day or sitting inside a pyramid. They're made of copper and zinc with crystals forged in pyramids, and basically all you have to do is hold them. It's in a topic that you might want to check into. It's called Egyptian healing rods. Yeah, and anyway, ancient Egypt thrived until about 7,500 BC, at which time the seventh density Syrians from the Sirius B star system arrived on the scene and began unraveling the work of Thoth and his group. And the Christian, Jewish, and Greek legends and myths are all about the Syrians. At the same time, the Orions and the Dracos began arriving on the scene, and you can find drawings of the Syrian and Draco gods on the walls throughout Egypt. Interesting to note, because I wanted to mention about Thoth, that he was known in Atlantis as Chiquetet Arlik Vomalites. He's also known as Hermes Trismegistus, and he was also known as the King of Chem in ancient Egypt. Also related to information on Thoth, that he was an eighth density being from Rigel in the Orion, but he was a renegade and he served to enlighten humans that they were not the spawn of the Nephilim, the fallen angels of Lucifer. He revealed to them that although the fallen lords had greatly tampered with their immortal bodies through eons of genetic manipulation, that humankind were still angels unaware. And I think that proof of that is in our current DNA. Pretty interesting guy, one of the most amazing beings that lived on the planet. Now, interestingly enough, because this kind of brings us to the connection with the Anunnaki, because I know in Tellinger, Michael Tellinger, also in addition to this, bringing up the concept of Ubuntu, and he's actually trying to start one of the model communities in South Africa, but he's also been involved with Adam's calendar, and he concurs with the findings of Zechariah Sitchin with respect to Anunnaki being the ones that did use the primate that time with their DNA to create what the modern version of Homo sapiens. And also concurring with that, by the way, is Andrew Bartzes. And if you don't know about Andrew, Andrew's called the Galactic Historian, and he has some amazing YouTubes. So you could check out Galactic Historian Andrew Bartzes, B-A-R-T-Z-I-S or Z-I-S. And interesting to note with these guys is that the Anunnaki, apparently one of their motivations for creating us was to use us as in a way, slaves to mine gold. And you would think, well, gee, why would they be so interested in gold? Well, turns out, like, for example, according to Bashar, gold turns out to be the frequency of longevity and timelessness itself, and it has multiple purposes. To repair damaged ozone holes, it's actually used to smuggle human DNA out of this sector of the universe because it's more easily disguised in the gold. It's also for the white powder to regenerate the body and produce longevity. It's used as a grease for greasing the wheels for spiritual growth. It certainly has space and travel implications because it's a monatomic, and it's a superconductor, and it also would have implications with respect to zero-point energy. So gold itself is just, you know, and it's not just the gold, because when you melt gold down, what you get is the white powder gold, and the white powder gold is monatomic elements. So here we go then connecting, or I guess David Hudson is the guy who basically rediscovered what he calls ORMEs, or orbitally rearranged monatomic elements. And David Hudson, I really highly suggest you looking up David Hudson and his story with respect to monatomics, because when David Hudson had his samples, and he was apparently a farmer, he had them checked out through the process of a spectroscopy, and the Soviet Academy of Sciences found that he had 6 to 8 ounces of palladium per ton, he had 12 to 13 ounces of platinum, 150 ounces of osmium, 250 ounces of ruthenium, 600 ounces of iridium, which we discussed previously, 800 ounces of rhodium, or a total of 2,400 ounces per ton when the best known deposit in the world is one-third of 1 ounce per ton. So the further testing proved its superconductive powers in white powder form and also interdimensional capabilities. And it literally is the light of life. And this is the part of your body that has been there all the time that scientists cannot find because their instruments can't see it. They call it carbon because it has no absorption or emission spectra, and they assume, therefore, that it is a carbon when, in fact, it isn't carbon. That there are 11 elements and that it could be, but primarily... rhodium and iridium are the elements that are in your body right now, and that literally they resonate and connect, and they are the light of life that's perpetually in your body. And I believe they've looked at some animal brain matter and found about 5% rhodium or iridium or monatomics. And incidentally, rhodium and iridium are present, as I mentioned before, in flax seeds and flaxseed oil. And in the 1950s, of course, there was this Joanna Budwig diet. And the interesting aspect about these monatomics or high-spin electrons is that the way it reacts with the DNA, correcting the DNA, and it corrects all the carcinogenic damage, all the radiation damage. All is corrected from this element in the presence of the cell. And they don't chemically interreact with it. They just correct the DNA. And then they took a doctor who administered small quantities of this material to an AIDS patient who was a day or two from dying and being fed intravenously, and he couldn't speak, or, and this is according to David Hudson, that after about a week and a half later, after taking this substance, he had pulled out all his feed lines out of his arms, and he was feeding himself normally, getting dressed on his own, and doing great. And a month and a half later, he was on an airplane going home to a family wedding in Indiana, and nobody even knew he had AIDS. Then the doctor got a patient who had KS, or Kaposi sarcoma, which is the cancer you get all over your skin. This man had over 30 lesions all over his body, and they began to give him 1 milliliter injections into his blood system. After a month and a half, there was no more active KS on his body. Now, if you're familiar with KS, there's only one treatment, and that's radiation treatment. And after a while, you get to the maximum amount of radiation, and then they have to discontinue the treatment, and then you get worse and die. And this totally got rid of KS lesions. And the list goes on and on and on. So I highly recommend you look at the David Hudson lectures on YouTube. And this is not anti-anything. This is not anti-AIDS. It's not anti-cancer. This is pro-life. This is according to Hudson, that this substance, the white powder, it literally is the spirit. The material is not here to cure AIDS. The material is not here to cure cancer. The material is here to perfect our bodies, and it makes our bodies be in the state they're supposed to be in. It is our own immune system that fights and cures the disease. if you can correct your DNA at every cell in your body, if you can correct the damage that has been done that brought about the cancer, and if you can correct the damage that has been brought about by the virus, the AIDS, you literally will become a perfected being, and you will return to the original healthy state you were meant to be in. And this is kind of interesting because he says that this is not medicine. This material is, in fact, a philosophical material. It is here to enlighten and to raise the consciousness of mankind. I think it's pretty interesting that Bashar has made some comments concerning it as well. He says, overall, there will be some increased longevity with iridium, with the rhodium and others, especially as connected to what you would call the natural diet and the removal and release of flushing toxins from the system. This alone will enhance your ability for increased longevity. The human body easily has the capacity within the next 15 years of beginning to lay the foundation for a lifespan of about 300 years. And one of the questions, Bashar, for those of us who are making the choice of taking more of the natural foods that contain rhodium and iridium, I'm wondering what we can expect from them. And Bashar says, feeling lighter, more energetic, needing less sleep, so on and so forth, better ability to heal, knit tissue, so on and so forth in case of injury, better enhancement of all sensory apparatus in the body, so on and so forth, more over time psychic sensitivity and sensitivity to other higher frequency energies is what, as you can say, you can expect. Pretty fascinating stuff. I might note as well that Thoth had been channeled and presents ways of using it safely. It has the capacity to burn out the higher level light body. And in this sense, possibly this is what happened with the Greys, who were apparently more interdimensional than extraterrestrial and a future version of humanity. They are said to be, having issues with burning out their emotional centers. So anyway, Thoth said that from a spiritual perspective, the powder helps the cellular consciousness to assimilate and reorient to the grace factor. It is not a cure-all, nor should it be treated as a normal type of supplement. And according to Thoth, Hudson's Orme is a viable form of prima matra, or first stages of matter, but works more on the electromagnetic level than do the natural powders. And Thoth says that there is actually an etheric molecule present in the natural powder called europia, and that it probably cannot be detected at this time by the scientific community. And in his channeling, he states that we all naturally find the surge of excitement when entertaining the possibilities and potential of what these monatomics present to us. And it's important to keep one's focus upon the development of divine characteristics within our personalities. Structures the paths to follow. The supernatural abilities, which are our natural birthright, will follow accordingly, and our consciousness will be prepared to handle them. So let us embrace the gift of the prima matras with this heartfelt focus, and then allow the evolution of our race to be a successful one. I think it's also interesting to note that monatomics is also clearly connected with the idea of alchemy and the philosopher's stone. And according to cosmic awareness, there is a difference between the alchemy derived, as Toth stated, and the philosopher's stone, the white powder discovered and rediscovered actually by David Hudson, which he calls Ormes. And although the effects seem similar, Hudson, of course, the ORME stands for Orbitally Rearranged Monatomic Elements. And it's high-spin electrons that have superconductive properties, interdimensional, and also reprogrammed disease cells. And in Greek mythology, the quest for the secret of this substance was at the heart of the Golden Fleece legend. While in biblical terms, it was the mystical realm of the Ark of the Covenant, the golden coffer which Moses brought out of Sinai to be housed in the Temple of Jerusalem. The ancient Mesopotamians called the powder Shenana. The Egyptians described it as muscat, while the Alexandrians venerated it as the paradise stone. And the stone or the white powder is also associated with the Great White Brotherhood. And the Rosicrucians, whose head was Saint Germain, by the way, and we know that the secret societies were the fashion in the pre-revolutionary France, and some of them recognized Saint Germain as an adept who knew the ancient wisdoms hinted at in the rites of the original Freemasons, Rosicrucians, and the Knights Templar. I find that actually the Saint Germain whole history to be quite fascinating, and I think at a future time I can go into a bit of his background. The Philosopher's Stone, according to on your YouTube or Google searches, the source Cosmic Awareness states that the Philosopher's Stone was first discovered in Atlantis about 12,000 BC, and it came about partially by accident, in which entities ingested substances found in the desert, and where there had been what appears to have been a place where a certain entity urinated frequently and at some point noticed the white powder on the earth without recognizing how it got there, tasted it, and noticed certain things happening to him. After some time, the entity began to realize what it was and how it worked. And that awareness, cosmic awareness, suggests that the entity did not discover at that time the effects of the powder on metal, and only at some time much later did that aspect of alchemy get recognized. So at some point in time, what they discovered was is that, yeah, the powder not only produces longevity, cures diseased cells, etc., but it's also a fundamental aspect in the alchemical process of turning lead into gold. And apparently how that works is that gold's the only element on the periodic table with a right-hand atomic spin. So if you can reverse the polarity of anything else, actually, it turns into gold. But according to Cosmic Awareness, there's actual proof in a British museum of a piece of metal that's half metal and half gold. And based on the characteristics of this particular piece of metal was proof that, in point of fact, the alchemists were capable of turning lead into gold. And for those people who want to like pursue that topic, I would highly suggest Google searching the Book of Aquarius, and as well as Google search Cosmic Awareness, how to make the Philosopher's Stone. And clearly the secret that's finally come out over the course of time with respect to developing the Philosopher's Stone, or in its real sense, it's not really a stone, it's really a white powder, that it comes about over time, and the secret is urine. Amazing. And as amazing as that is, it is a process. It's not simple. Even the Book of Aquarius, which gives a formula of processing this, takes about a 3.5-year period. In Cosmic Awareness System, about 13 months. So if you really have an interest in that topic, you can certainly pursue those at the Book of Aquarius or Cosmic Awareness, How to Make the Philosopher's Stone. So in sort of recapping tonight's information, I wanted to kind of dabble into some ideas to get people thinking about alternative economic systems. really highly suggest you check out Michael Tellinger, his interviews at Project Camelot concerning Ubuntu, concerning some of his information around the South African community model that he's trying to set up. Also his information concerning Anunnaki, their connection with gold, his immaterial coinciding with Zechariah Sitchin and also Andrew Bartzy's Galactic Historian. Wanted to get into some aspects about monatomics, because monatomics, especially as it's currently coming up with that California crop circle and a hint at iridium, which is a hint at, in my way of thinking, monatomics and ways to correct DNA that's, according to common knowledge, there's no way to deal with the effects of radiation. I mean, other than they suggest taking, you know, iodine to help in some ways of protection, but nothing along the magnitude and the nature of monatomic elements. And I might add as well that if you're interested in some information that you wouldn't find in your colleges or universities, you can always go to www.etyoga.com. And my new book's out there. It's called ET Yoga 2012 and Beyond, The True Nature of Reality. I think you'll find that it's $9.95, and for $10, you're going to get more knowledge there than you will in the next, well, I don't know how many years, because it depends on what's going to be made available at the universities in the future. But I'd also like to take this opportunity at this time to wish everyone my sincere best towards their attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And I guess the guys in the booth will do our new weekly XYZ meditation. Have yourself a great night.
I'd like to share with you the XYZ extraterrestrial meditation. First, you need to get really relaxed, either lying down or sitting comfortably, or even standing up, whatever is the most comfortable for you. I then suggest taking a couple of deep breaths and imagine yourself in your perfect place of peace. You haven't a worry in the world and are just relaxing in your perfect place of peace. Then imagine the following. Around the area of your heart or solar plexus, just behind that area, is a bright ball of white light. It is a packet of energy that is your essence. This star that you feel inside yourself, this ball of light, now grows and grows and grows in intensity and gets stronger and stronger and stronger until it bursts forth as a beam of light, a laser-like beam bursting out of the front of you and stretches as far as you can imagine infinity to be. Stretching, stretching out as a beam of light beyond the solar system, beyond the Milky Way galaxy, and beyond. Going faster and faster and faster all the way to infinity. But it is also elastic, so as it reaches infinity, it slows down and will stop and turn around, and as a solid beam, it will creep back towards you from the far reaches of infinity. Faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until it comes crashing through the center of your body and through you and out your back and all the way to infinity out the back. All the way out, further, further, until it reaches infinity, and it returns, but a little faster now. And faster and faster and faster until it too crashes through you, out the front, all the way to infinity. But it returns even faster now, out the back and out the front, and out the back and out the front, and out the back and out the front, and out the back and out the front. Back and forth, 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 back and forth. And out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And let yourself get used to this idea. And then when it gets right in the middle of your body, it crashes out the left side all the way to infinity, and back out the right side all the way to infinity, and turns and comes back through the center, out the left side, and back out the right side, and side to side, and side to side and front and back 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 until you get used to the idea, and then you have created an X and Y axis. Now another beam goes crashing through your head up all the way to infinity and turns around and comes crashing back through your head and out the bottom and up and down 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 and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side. And it begins to build, 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 and builds to build until an infinite number of rays fly out simultaneously to infinity and stay there. You are suspended on beams of light, and you are stabilized at infinity. You hang there for eternity at infinity. Then you start to notice little bits of pulses, symbols, and signals, like a web that you are in the center of. Bits of information coming and going from every dimension and every space and time that exists. Every doorway and every gateway and forms and ideas and messages and communications like a giant matrix. You feel the ebb and flow of the infinite possibilities from every space and time, from front and back and side to side and up and down, clickety-clack, 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 clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety- on every line outward and receive one large pulse coming back like a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom. And now you're starting to sense a larger infinite mass mind behind this heartbeat, this pulse. It's like a gigantic awareness, one soul, one mind. You are suspended in the center of eternity. Boom, 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 boom. Now, with every heartbeat, a new breath, a new awareness, a new perspective, a new experience, a new sensation, a new dimension, a new galaxy, forever, forever, new, new, new. And now all the beams expand until you are surrounded in a sea of light that is becoming more transparent until it is like a bubble, but you can still hear it. Boom, 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 boom. You can feel the seed of all that is, and as the blood flows from your own heart, as the seed of the infinite of all that is, on that pulse, you are connected from every direction and any direction simultaneously. And every time you remember your heartbeat, you will feel connected to this heartbeat. Be in your perfect place of peace and feel your heartbeat. Now, take a deep breath and feel refreshed, feel loved, and feel energized.
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of time.